Hello, mentors. Welcome to our podcast series, Mentorships in Education, brought to you by Just Education at justeducationfirst.com. I am your host, Judy Epstein. I am very excited about the wide range of experts who have volunteered to give up their time and expertise. They will share their innovative ideas, their exciting perspectives, their rich resources, and their research with us. Please continue to delve into these topics on their websites and with your legal counsel, healthcare provider, and education professional. Our guests have information that will be relevant to mentors supporting struggling students, parents, teachers, administrators, legal support, and health professionals. We will address all levels of education with issues that affect academic performance. Our goal is to open discussions and introduce a variety of approaches to those searching for information in a free venue. So, mentors, let me introduce our guest for today. This is your host, Judy Epstein. Thank you for listening to Mentorships in Education, brought to you by Just Education at justeducationfirst.com. You may contact me and we can talk about and explore the possibility of working together. If you would like to do that, please go to my website again at justeducationfirst.com. Over the last year, I have focused on struggles that our students face that often lead to academic problems, or conversely, academic problems that may contribute to the development of behavior problems. When I started reading more about our guests today, I was reminded that students who are very gifted also have challenges. Perhaps because of the very nature of their strengths, they struggle, or perhaps because of their gift that is overshadowed by those struggles. We've touched upon the special educational issues associated with a gifted student before. Today, we're going to delve a little deeper, and we may find the challenges can disguise the gift. Our guest, who is doing some amazing work with students, refers to this population as twice exceptional or 2E, and we're going to find out a little bit more about what that means. Thank you, Julie, for joining us. I appreciate the time you've put into making this happen. I know you've been very busy. Before I start talking to you directly, though, I'd like to tell our audience a little bit about you.
Great.
I was reading about Julie Rosenbaum Skolnick, and I've also spoken to her, so I've learned a little bit more about so many things that she's involved with. I realized how much I did not understand. She's a very busy lady, so I want to tell you a little bit about some of the things that she's doing. Julie is founder of With Understanding Comes Calm. She's a passionate guide for parents and gifted and distractible children. She mentors 2E adults, trains educators, advises professionals on how to bring out the best, and raises self-confidence in their 2E students and clients. She serves on a whole slew of committees and boards, and I'm not going to go through them all. You can delve more into it on the website in one of the tabs. To give you an example, she's secretary to the Maryland Superintendent's Gifted and Talented Advisory Council, and she is an advisor for the Masters of Education program for the Bridges Graduate School of Cognitive Diversity. She's also a Maryland liaison for supporting the emotional needs of gifted children, which is SENG, and other things. Please check this out. She produces Let's Talk 2E virtual conferences. She hosts the Let's Talk 2E parental empowerment series. She's a frequent speaker and a prolific writer. And she's also the mother of three twice exceptional children who keep her on her toes and uproariously laughing. And I hope she shares some of the uproariously laughing parts with us a little bit. So let's get down to hearing from Julie again. Welcome, Julie. Perhaps you could start by talking to our listeners a little bit about yourself, personally, maybe your educational background, and then get in a little bit to your family and your children and how you developed your philosophy that you have created and are willing to share with others. I call it your aha moment.
Well, thank you, Judy, for having me on your podcast. I love to be able to spread the word, as I like to say, shout from the rooftops about this amazing population, very complex population. So you asked my educational background. Happy to provide that. I have a master's in sociology. I have a law degree from Cornell Law School. I was sort of like a perpetual student. I actually loved school, most of school. And so I was a practicing lawyer, then I did development and marketing, and then I had I had two of my three babies, and it was evident that baby number two, when he became five, we were advised by some really great teachers to have him, psychoeducationally tested, because the way that these teachers, and you know, you mentioned this, Judy, and this is so important. I guide parents. I mentor actually 2E, twice exceptional and 2E are synonyms. So I mentor 2E adults and I train teachers. So, and I also work with clinicians on understanding the profile. I like to say I have all four legs of the stool, their perspective and their understanding. And it's really, really, well, it's really important because this vignette that I'm about to share with you, what's so important about it is that the teachers really came at this in a strength-based way. You're going to hear that when I give you this vignette. So the teachers of my then 5-year-old in kindergarten said, you know, we think it might make sense for you to have your son tested, because every time we have a visitor to our classroom, they always ask the same question. Why is the kid who's paying the least amount of attention the only one who knows all the answers? So isn't that an interesting way to bring that up, right? So, and not only did they do that, but they shared some testing sites and places, and they made sure to tell us that they refer those to other parents, so then I knew I wasn't alone. I mean, this was way back when I knew nothing about anything. And so that experience, having that happen, that was the first thing that was really important, is that so often families of 2E kids have negative experiences with educators, and boy, have I had a lot of those as a mama. But there are times when there are educators you really can lean on. And when I educate and train teachers, I tell them to lean on parents. Parents are really the experts of their kids. But there are also times when educators have to be the advocate on behalf of a 2E kid. So everybody wears all the same hats, and it's best if we can collaborate. Well, so moving on, when he was tested, he was diagnosed as gifted and ADHD. And we were kind of like, duh, gifted. This was a 5-year-old who was actually answering the tester in Hebrew because he thought it would be good for her to learn Hebrew and it would be more exciting and fun to do it that way. So we ignored gifted for a good 3 years. I was about 8 months pregnant when he was tested. And we lived in the ADHD land, because ADHD sounds like something you have to really pay attention to. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It's like you need to take an aspirin and go to bed when your kid gets that diagnosis, because there's nothing strength-based or positive about that. And I'm here to tell you, I actually think that that is the more evolved mind, the ADHD mind, with its creativity and abilities.
Thank you.
Judy mentioned that I do a lot of writing, and I do. I write a blog a month, and I have done so for about 7 years. So there's a lot of blogs on my website with understandingcomescom.com. And one of them, I renamed ADHD. And I called it hyperattention activity deficit, because they can actually pay attention to a whole bunch of things at the same time. And they need to move. And what they need is some support on their executive functioning to prioritize which fabulous thing they're thinking about at this time for which goal. So, you know, moving forward, I paid attention to ADHD because it sounded like the thing that I needed to remediate. I needed to fix. You know, we are very diagnosed and fixed in this country.
Yes.
And I actually ended up finding out that the ADHD community was really kind of glass half empty, frankly. He was going to drop out of school, as smart as he was. He was going to do drugs. He was going to be a reckless driver. He was going to abuse alcohol. He was going to probably get divorced. I mean, like, it was like, wow.
Wow.
Kid's only five. So you mentioned, yeah, You mentioned SANG, Supporting the Emotional Needs of the Gifted, and right. that is a fabulous resource, sanggifted.org, S-E-N-G-I-F-T-E-D.org. And I attended a conference because I thought social emotional needs, man, that would be a good place for me to be. And it actually changed our lives. And now I'm the Maryland liaison. I speak at their conference every year and have lots of friends there. And what I learned there was a lot more positive reframe, strength-based approach, the need to not say, until your behavior gets under control, you can't have this, that, or the other thing. And this, that, or the other thing was like enrichment, acceleration, important passion projects. The truth of the matter is, if you actually do allow for those things, the behavior does get under control. So it's completely backwards. So that answered a little bit of your education background, and that answered a little bit of your family and children question. So maybe that's a good place for me to.
Yeah. And that was kind of your aha moment when you became involved with the stayinggifted.org. That's the website that you went to. They kind of helped give you some direction. And
well, truth be told, attending the conference and having all of the strength-based presentations and sessions. And then my other aha moment was when I was talking to a friend of mine from there in Gifted Land. And it was before I started my service. And we were talking about one of my kids and the whole trajectory of something that had just happened. And I said, you know, with understanding comes calm. And then I was like, oh, that's what I'm going to be called.
That's so true. Yeah, that's great.
There's so much misunderstanding.
Julie, give me a sense of when we say someone is gifted, what does that mean? How do we, because it's used, I think generally in a lot of different situations. How is that defined? What do we mean when someone is gifted? And talk a little bit about the 2E part of it. Twice exceptional.
Okay. Yep. So probably those of you out there who are listening think that gifted means one of these words. Smart.
Yes.
Bright. Potential. Yes. Ability. Right? So yes, that is part of the gifted definition. You know, the truth of the matter is, I think you mentioned Gifted and Distractible, which is the name of my free newsletter. Mm-hmm. And it's the way that I kind of, it was that casting that net quite widely to catch this population in Gifted and Distractible. And most people would ask me about what distractible means. And that's really all those diagnoses we know about, dysgraphia, dyslexia, dyscalculia, auditory processing, all sorts of, you know, high functioning autism, ADHD, anxiety, executive functioning, working memory, processing speed, all those things. And frankly, I think we know a lot about those things. It's the gifted part that people don't really get. And why don't people get what gifted means? Because there's not one definition. In this country, we do have a federal definition. We have the National Association for Gifted Children definition. Every state, actually, four states don't have a definition, but every state that does have a definition has different definitions, but it doesn't matter because there's no mandate. And it's all very state by state. And if you want to learn more about your state, National Association for Gifted Children, NAGC.org is the place to find out what your state definition and what the mandates are, if there are any.
Okay.
So gifted, I like to use, and those definitions all talk about this ability piece. They might give a nod toward needing to differentiate in the classroom, but nobody really talks about the social emotional piece. And so I base my definition on what's called the Columbus Group definition, which is a definition that was created very thoughtfully by a group of parents, educators, and clinicians in the 1980s in Columbus, Ohio. And it really talks about that high ability, but the social emotional needs and how it's important to parent and counsel and teach these kids differently. So from that definition, I extrapolated and created, because I like chocolate and I like analogies.
Yes.
Yep. Chocolate and analogies. So I created the 3-layer cake definition of giftedness. Now, if you're out there and you like vanilla or strawberry or any other flavor, that's okay. You can think about it in your head that way. But when I'm talking and I put it on the screen, it's a 3-layer chocolate cake with chocolate frosting, just saying. So the frosting piece, that's the ability. That's above, around, and between all the layers, but it's you know, it's, I'm holding on my fingers and making a little, you know, this size, the frosting. But then you got these three layers of cake or three characteristics. The first is asynchronous development. And I'll tell you what all of these mean very briefly after I tell you what all three layers or three characteristics are. But asynchronous development, perfectionism, the other side of which can be anxiety. And then what's known in gifted parlance as overexcitability or intensities. So asynchronous development is when you're developing, think of a three ring Venn diagram where you have emotion, physical, and intellectual. And those three areas develop differently at different times. And so we talk about it maybe as the 5, 10, 15 rule, where you might be 10 chronologically, 15 in some area, and 5 somewhere else. And very often that 5 area is a social emotional development. If it's a learning difference or a learning disability, that's where we get the 2E, the twice exceptional. Now there's a lot of talk also about 3E. And 3E might mean that you have a cultural diversity, an economic diversity, or a gender identification difference. So, and by the way, this is just a little teaser, but really interesting. There tends to be a very high correlation of gifted or 2E with gender fluidity and different gender identification, which is really fascinating. A lot seen in the high functioning autism population. Okay. So we talked about asynchronous development. The second layer is perfectionism.
Right.
And the other side of which is anxiety. So perfectionism, you know, can be a driving force. It can help us do our best work and be an incentive. But when it becomes unhealthy and it keeps us from being able to do things, gifted underachievement is actually a research term, gifted underachievement. When it keeps us from doing something, then we're in the anxiety realm and the unhealthy perfectionism realm. And that happens to gifted kids because when you define gifted as smart, and you're always told how smart you are, if you are asynchronous, which again is a defining factor of giftedness, not just 2E, you start to doubt yourself. At some point, usually third grade, eighth grade, things get harder. There's something you just can't mask anymore or compensate for. And so that perfectionism butts heads with the asynchrony, and almost every client that I have, anxiety is part of the profile. It's just baked in. And then the third characteristic, so we had asynchronous development, perfectionism, and the third is what's known as overexcitability. Some people in gifted land call it super stimulatability, just to keep that positive reframe happening because they feel like overexcitability sounds negative. But this is a way of coming to the world as a wider, heightened antenna. You take everything in. I know you're out there thinking, oh my God, she's describing my kid, because that's pretty much what people say at this point when I'm talking to them, that, you know, you're just hyper aware of stimulation that comes in, sensory stimulation and other, your emotions. I'll tell you what, 100% of my clients check off emotion regulation as a challenge that they have with their kids. And so overexcitability is a term, another research term that was coined by psychologist Kazimierz Dąbrowski, and he identified 5 areas of overexcitability: intellectual, emotional, imaginational, sensual, which you can think of as sensory, and psychomotor, that H in ADHD, right? So all of that together, that's actually what gifted means. So sit, face forward, do more work. That's not what you want to ask a gifted kid. That's not a gifted kid. That's a high achiever. Sit, face forward, do more work. That's a high achiever, and they'll probably burn out. Gifted kids tend to revolt sooner when they're put into
that. I like that, revolt. So if a parent or teacher is listening and they have a child that they feel has the asynchronous development, perfectionism slash anxiety, the overexcitability, and they're confused, they're frustrated, they don't know how to support this child, they don't know what to do. I'm assuming that you're suggesting that these could be indicative of a child who is 2E, and maybe they ought to look into some assessments and ways to support them. Is that kind of what you're saying? Because I think some of these kids have not actually been evaluated. I mean, they're I would assume they're just kind of taken out of the room and put somewhere by themselves so they don't bother the rest of the class. So
yeah. big fat pouty face to that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So what typically happens is they're labeled as the bad kid.
Yeah.
You know, the difficult kid. Teachers are warned year by year. Oh, you're going to have a tough time. And oh, the parents also tend to get judged. And then there are sometimes when parents come into a classroom and expect a lot from a teacher who hasn't been trained in this area, and very few have. And so it's really the best is to actually collaborate and ask each other how you can help and mirror what's happening at home that's successful and mirror what's happening at school that's successful. But assessment is one thing, sure. The teacher needs training, absolutely. The parent needs guidance. You know, and there are places to find that. Certainly, if you go to letstalk2e.com, which is part of With Understanding Comes Calm, all my conferences are up there from 2018, 19, and 20, and 21, and they're on demand forever, and they're very important for teachers and parents to learn, because With Understanding Comes Calm. So first step is to understand. Second step is strategies, and third step is advocacy.
That's what I want you to do. I want you to talk now, it's a perfect segue, into what is this resource that you have developed with Understanding Comes Calm. How can our listeners take advantage of it? What is available to them free? And how can they use you as a resource if they want to go further?
Great. Thanks for asking that question. So sometimes people ask me if I can give an elevator speech, and I say, sure, but my building's really tall. So I think I said that to you, Judy, when you first talked to me. So I'm going to try to do this as quickly as possible. But bottom line is, people, if you're like, oh my God, I can't listen to all of this, go to withunderstandingcomescom.com and you could spend days in there. There's so much that's free and available. So there's With Understanding Comes Calm. I offer to anybody and everybody a 20-minute free consultation, which you can book using my name. I'm sure Judy will put it in the show notes, but it's julieskolnick.youcanbook.me. So julieskolnick.youcanbook.me. And you can arrange a 20-minute free telephone call with me where you'll tell me what's going on for you, and I'll tell you if I can help you or if I can refer you somewhere. So that's number one. Number two, under With Understanding Comes Calm, so that's where I consult with parents, TUI adults, educators. You can book me for speaking. I do all sorts of speaking and presentations to parent committees, teacher committees. So that's another way. You can sign up for free for my Gifted and Distractible monthly newsletter. It does not come out in July. It's the only month it doesn't come out. But that's a place to get my blog. That's a place to get articles. I have a list of events going on all the time. And we have sponsors, so you get to learn about people in the community. And to sign up for that, you would go to withunderstandingcomescom.com, click on Learn With Me, click on Newsletters, and there will be a subscription there that you can just fill out. From there, if you go to About Me and you click on Media, you're going to find all sorts of podcasts. Every podcast I've ever been on, this one will eventually show up there too, will be there for you to listen to for free. I've been on all sorts of podcasts, from dyslexia podcasts to Tilt Parenting and Parent Footprint, and lots of podcasts that are there, and that's free. The Let's Talk 2E on my menu, that leads you to conferences. Those are not free, but they're so cheap. It's like $5 a session or something it comes to. So, and those are specific to parents, to teachers, to clinicians. And then we also have a parent community, and I do parent empowerment groups, which are really awesome. We have people, for parents from all over the world, that join us for those. And part of them every other week is a live webinar with me and Q&A, and then the other ones are community building sessions, which is great. You can go to 2eresources.com, which is totally free, searchable 24/7 at 2eresources.com, and it lists all sorts of resources for gifted and 2E under 5 categories: educations, clinicians, consultants, associations, and enrichment. So we're always adding, and if you're a resource who should be there, you should reach out and let us know. So you have all of that happening for you as well. So other than that, I am published and lots of articles are up there. You can look at my blog. And if you're on social media, my media strategist posts every single day articles, events, things that people need to know about. Sometimes we do Facebook Live interviews of our TUI resources. So you can find me on Facebook, four pages, With Understanding Comes Calm, Let's Talk TUI Teachers Lounge, Let's Talk TUI Parents, and soon to launch Let's Talk TUI Adults. You can find me anywhere, pretty much, on social media, even Pinterest, which is crazy. But more importantly, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn, either by my name or by Let's Talk TUI or With Understanding Comes Calm. And we post different things everywhere, every day, and lots of really important information. And we share information from our community because we're very well connected with everybody around the world. So I think that answers your question, Judy. Did I leave?
Absolutely. No, I think it does. I think I want to kind of delve a little deeper into the foundation for some of the things that you do. Individuals who have researched some of the practices that you promote. And I'd like to talk a little bit about technology and how you either use or try to maybe dissuade people from using so much technology with some of the profile of some of the children that they're working with, and how that research also kind of intersects with what you do. So can I let you flow with some of that maybe?
So I'll just jump in on the technology, because that's what you said most recently, and my working memory said, I'm going to pay attention to that. So So, you know, technology is a blessing and a curse. And with COVID, even if you had the greatest structured plan for your kid, for your students on technology, what were you going to do? It was the only way for them to be social. But we do know that using technology, unfortunately, can be addictive. It's a really great way for the monkey mind that often comes with gifted and 2E people to relax.
Can you define that?
The monkey mind is when you think about a monkey jumping around all the time, right? Like you have constant thoughts. You're constantly noticing things. You're constantly thinking about things. Why our kids cannot sleep at night or fall asleep at night. And why I talk with parents all the time about ways to relax the brain and how to be able to sort of disconnect. And so it can be important. And some gifted and TUI brains can actually monitor themselves and disengage, but there is a big percentage of kids who absolutely cannot, and parents and teachers see the difference in behavior and mood with their uptick in, or even any interaction with screens. And it's just, and by the way, all the video game creators, we all know this, right? They are creating these games to make them more and more addictive. You want to get to the next level. You want to see what the next thing is. They give you prizes to get to the next, whatever it is. And that TUI brain is ripe for that, right? That incentive brain. So I really recommend, please, teachers who are listening, do not give online homework, especially if you're online schooling still. Get those brains off the computer. I'm actually not a big fan of homework at all. So whenever you cannot, that's the best. No homework, particularly for gifted kids, because they don't need the homework. Why are they doing the same thing over and over? And if they don't know how to do it, then it doesn't make sense that they should be doing that at home alone. They need to have instruction for that. So if it's a passion project, if it's something they want to delve deeply into, or it's expanding their horizons, great. But if you're just having them practice drills, my guess is for a gifted or a TUI kid, they don't need it, especially without the support that they might need to do that homework. So what I'm saying in this category, as we're talking about screen time, is to lessen the screen time. And if you have homework, to make it something that is not on a screen. For families out there, it's really important to have very specific guidelines. What are your expectations around screens? What is okay? What is okay? How much time a day is okay? How much time a week is okay? Make sure that that structure is very specific. And most importantly, that your child, no matter what their age, I don't care if they're 3 or they're 13 or they're 17, to have them as part of the discussion defining the amount of time. Because then it's much more, oh yeah, whenever it's much more sticky, you get buy-in if the kids help define the parameters are. So, and then I really recommend, are you ready for this? Fasten your seatbelts, because I don't want you to fall off your chair. But I recommend a 24-hour fast every week. So in my family, we do that naturally Friday at sundown to Saturday at sundown. But we recommend a 24-hour fast of everybody. Everybody in the house has to do this. Mom, dad, no computer, no TV, no phone for 24 hours every week. It actually, research shows that it actually helps to rewire the brain and heal the brain from all the screens.
Maybe people will talk to each other a little bit.
What a concept, nice. Right?
So what I asked before, and maybe I didn't get into some of the specifics. So I guess my question before more alluded to some of the situations where kids might be emotionally overloaded, having a lot of opposition in certain situations. We would describe as maybe someone who's disrupting the classroom. And we kind of often have the perspective that this child is doing this to get attention or is just doing this to be difficult. And when we spoke before, you mentioned some individuals like Ross Green, that who you work a lot with in terms of culling some of the, from research that he's done. Talk to me how you apply some of this to the work you do with kids, how you differentiate between someone who's being oppositional and someone who is actually in stress because they don't know how to deal with the situation that they're being asked to deal with.
So that's a lot,
but.
No, that's okay. And I love Ross Green, and his website is livesinthebalance.org. So here's my answer. Ready? Are they oppositional or are they under stress? Are they a child? Then they're under stress. No kid wants to be oppositional. No kid wants to be oppositional. So Ross Green would say all kids would do well if they could. That's his saying. Kids would do well if they could. I don't actually believe in oppositional defiant disorder. I don't think it's real. So just going to say that. Oh, Julie Stolnick says oppositional defiant disorder is not real. It is an environmentally induced situation. So remember all those overexcitabilities we talked about? Overexcitabilities, these are differently wired kids. These are people. And by the way, you don't outgrow your 2E-ness. So you might be in the workplace going, oh my God, that's my colleague so-and-so, or oh my God, that's me. And here you are, some people are better at mitigating or dealing with compensating for their challenges. But if you're this huge, wide antenna that comes out into the world and everything affects you in a much bigger way, that means the lights might be causing you stress. That means you might have such good hearing. I had a client the other day, actually, it's a new client. I haven't met with them yet, but during our 20 minutes, she said something so interesting to me. And I know we're going to talk about this because she said, you know, people keep talking about how we need to make him less. They actually have a 3-year-old. I mean, I had clients who were 77. I have clients who were 3. And she said, you know, I don't know if I want to make his hearing less good. I have that, she said, the mom. I don't know if I want to not be able to be tuned in to like what people are saying across the room and be able to hear things like, across, right? Like, first of all, this is
superpowers.
How is this? Total superpowers, Judy. Yeah. Exactly the words I use. So the world isn't set up for these people who can change the world and make the world a better place and create empathy because they come to the world with this extra sensory perception, right? Yeah. And so what do you do? Number one is, guys, here's what I say to teachers. Find the hardest kid to love because you know who it is because your colleagues have told you. Find the hardest kid to love and love him the hardest. That's the first thing. Make time to sit down one-on-one with that kid in person. During COVID, I even said, put a mask on and stand in their front door and meet that kid. Talk to that kid. Find out what makes them tick. Find out what ticks them off. Try to fold in your lessons, something that they are interested in. The more you get to, these kids know within 30 seconds whether a grown-up is patronizing them or actually is interested in them. So I'll share something personal. My middle guy is now 18 and he just won a bunch of awards, and I posted it, to my friends, not to my followers, but to my friends on Facebook, and his third grade teacher, who was one of a handful of awesome teachers he had as a little guy, we gave her a gift that said, it was a necklace that said, "You get me," or "You got me."
Oh,
and
nice.
She posted a comment and she said, "I knew this would be him or his abilities," whatever. And then she wrote, "And my favorite teacher gift to this day is the YGM You Got Me necklace." Because she got
tears to your eyes.
Well, let me tell you, parents, when you have one of those teachers, I mean, there's nothing I wouldn't do for the teachers who loved my kid and got my kid. But so the point is, you got to take the time to get to know the kid and stop making an assumption and stop thinking, "I've got to manage this. I've got to figure out how to manage this." That's not the focus. The focus is, how do I learn about this kid? How do I get into his world? And actually, on my website, if you go to work with me and you go to either parent or adult, because it's actually relevant for both, I have a video that I've recorded on how to talk to your child about being gifted in 2E. And it's really important for you to understand, because it actually, what I'm hearing from clients is that their kids are saying, "Oh my God, that's me. There are other people." And I talk about how they're this huge, wide antenna and how the world affects them in a bigger way and how they in turn affect the world in a bigger way, and how we have to do a cost benefit analysis on, do I need to be this big right now? Or can I notice that maybe I'm a little bit big for the person I'm talking to? Right. And that's the problem. Here's the life cycle of a 2E kid. Okay. They come into the world and they are gorgeous. They are more attuned to everything happening on the planet. They have empathy like you can't believe. They are able to make connections like you've never seen before. Their skill set's incredible, though they might also have dysgraphia, or they might have a dyslexia, or they might not be so athletic, or they might, whatever their asynchrony is, right? But they're big. They're like Kramer on Seinfeld. They come into the room and it's them, boom. And they're told for their entire elementary life, stop being so, stop being this. Can't you just sit? Can't you just sit down and be quiet? Can't you focus? Can't you? Don't be so. So they stop being so. What a bummer for the world. And then they become adolescents and they're still told, don't be your organic self. Your organic self stinks. It's making my life harder. And so now they're angry as adolescents. And when I get the kids, when I get parents, I don't work with kids. I work with the grownups. When I get parents or educators of the younger kids, I can stop some of that. When we get into the older ages, I still can mitigate, but it's oftentimes that we need them to be in a different atmosphere where they can actually be with people and peers who appreciate who they are. Because until that happens, there has been this big dungeon door that has been built brick by brick. And every intervention, which is, whether it's an SLP, a speech language pathologist trying to teach pragmatic language, how to be social, whether it's an OT, whether it's an enrichment class, whether it's a therapist, whether it's whatever the intervention is, they're all looking for the key to unlock that door and find the authentic kid who was told as a little guy, "You're oppositional. You're making my life harder," as opposed to somebody saying, "Hey, let me in. Let me learn about you. Like, what's happening for you right now?" So to answer your question, I think, for the kid who's disrupting the classroom, for the kid who seems to be oppositional, stop. Get some, hopefully you have a para or an assistant teacher, and one of you can sit with this kid and learn about them. Because I'll tell you what's going to happen. He's going to start out the day and something's going to bother him. Probably the fact that he lost something. His schoolwork, his shoes, his whatever. And so he starts by feeling badly about himself in the morning. So already think of that, this bucket of resilience is starting to empty. Okay. Mom, dad frustrated with him, siblings frustrated because now he's making everybody late and he doesn't get to eat. Okay. More resilience coming out of that bucket. He's on his way to school, whether it's in the bus or carpool, something negative happens. There's too much sensory stuff happening, loud, smell, light, proximity, doesn't know how to socially interact. More resilience coming out. Now he's walking into school. Somebody says something mean to him because he's quirky, more resilience out, goes over to his locker. It's loud, whatever's happening. He's worried. He forgot to do his homework. He left it at home. He doesn't know. The teacher doesn't like him. Whatever's going on for him. By the time he gets to your classroom, he's lived an entire lifetime. And he just needs kindness at that point because he's getting all sorts of negative feedback all day long.
You said to me when we were talking before, to kind of get ready for this, you said, we need to learn to praise our students. I don't remember the exact words, but we need to learn to praise our students, not just for the product that they produce, but for the process. And I think that kind of goes to what you were just addressing, because sometimes we don't do that. We get so focused on the math paper that we want them to hand in, and we forget about the whole process that goes into producing that math paper and how much effort they put in to sitting there to do the work that we want them to do. So you kind of answered my question before I asked that, but I think that's kind of a good summary.
That's actually a little bit, that's a little bit different, actually.
Okay.
So what I was talking about was really taking the time to find out about this kid, to learn about this kid, always learn about this kid and find out what makes him tick and what ticks him off. What you're talking about is praising the process versus the product. So instead of the you're so smart, A+, gold star, whatever, it's more important to say, wow, you really thought about that. I can tell you went home and read everything you could about that assignment. I mean, whether he has an A, B, C, D, even F, you got to praise the process to encourage the effort. And that actually goes towards, that's the inoculation against perfectionism, actually, because perfectionism goes to the product. They see it in their mind's eye. They know what they want it to look like, and they might have a hard time producing it, particularly if there's a learning difference or a learning disability. So we want to praise the process. And this actually comes from Carol Dweck, and her book is called Mindset. And that's really what she talks about, having that effort mindset, which is very, very important. But the first thing I was talking about was getting to know the child.
Okay.
And the piggyback to that is actually finding something, anything this kid does positively and tell the parents in a 1, 2, 3 sentence email or a quick phone call or even an awesome handwritten note. I tell my teachers at the beginning of the year to have two things. One, to have an envelope for every single child so that they can send a 1 or 2 sentence note home with something positive that their child did. Oh, Johnny was on the playground today and I saw he invited the new child to play with him. I was so proud of him. Or Susie's always the one who raises her hand to help me pass out papers or whatever it can be that can be positive. You can find positive stuff. Send that handwritten 1-sentence note to a parent will make a huge difference. The other thing is to have a pile of sticky notes and to have each child's name on each one sticky note per child and write some positive thing, noticing their effort, and put it on their desk without even talking to them. Sometimes gifted or TUI kids.
Oh, I love that.
So used to hearing negative feedback. It's a little bit overwhelming for them, or they don't actually think they don't think you mean it. So if you write a sticky note and you write the names of every kid, so you make sure you hit every kid at least once, then, and you just put, I love the way you started right in on the assignment I just gave, or I love how you got right down to work, or I appreciate so much how I can see you researching that topic, whatever it is, for whatever age.
Okay, I'm glad you clarified that. Thank you. We're kind of getting toward the end, and there's one quote of yours that I'm going to read, and I would like you to take the last few minutes to elaborate a little bit about it and maybe give some final words to parents and teachers who are listening. You said to me, we have to believe in our heart that the world is wrong and our kids are right. And I love that. It's beautiful. Can you tear it apart a little bit and talk about it and maybe work in some final words of wisdom to the listeners?
That's so nice. I mean, to have yourself quoted back to yourself, I don't even remember saying that, but it does sound like me. So thank you, Judy, for appreciating that, because, you know, one of the things I say is I give parents permission to parent differently and I give teachers permission to teach differently. And so this is sure a different point of view, right? Well, this goes toward the environment. again, oppositional defiant disorder. It took me a long time to remember that actually diagnosis. I could never recall the words because I hate it so much. And I finally remember this silly name. And it goes towards what I said before that the environment, there's something wrong with the environment. The kid is not wrong. The kid is not broken. There's something happening in the environment, whether it's your environment in your classroom or your home, or it's happening outside and that bucket of resilience is empty by the time they get to you, that, you know, I have a blog that I wrote called Lego My Ego instead of Lego My Ego. And that's for parents and teachers. It's not about you. It's about this kid,
right?
This particular kid and their particular experience based on their particular and very unique neurology.
That's so important. That's so important because often when a child is disrespectful to us or doesn't listen to what we're saying, we take it personally. And that's great advice. It's not about us.
Well, I'll tell you, actually, it's a great point, Judy, because what happens is when you're in second, third, fourth, fifth grade and onward, you're used to being the bad kid. And guess what? It's a heck of a lot easier to be the bad kid from day one than to try and end up as the bad kid. So I'm going to make them hate me from day one. I dare you to like me. I dare you. I dare you to try to hear what I have to say, because nobody wants to hear what I have to say. And I promise you, that kid is going to be the funniest, wittiest, punniest, most insightful, empathetic, will do anything for you kid that you have in your class. I know it's hard to believe right now. You're thinking about that kid who is so difficult. Parents might be thinking about that kid that, oh, why can't they just sit at the dinner table? Why can't they just eat what I make? Why can't they just go to sleep? Why can't they just wake up? Why can't they? I'm telling you, there's something there you got to find out first. You got to show them that you care by asking the questions. You know, transitions, that's a really hard thing for our kids. Transitions are really hard. Well, there are ways to address transitions that don't have to make them so difficult for our kids. And we just have to know that that's possible and we have to keep trying. And when we screw up, because we will, we have to know, just like I want you to for them, I want there to be a new day the next day. It's a new day for you too. And it's a really wonderful, I tell parents all the time, if you screw up, I want you to do like a fist pump in the air. Like, yes, why? Because that's the perfect opportunity to role model how to apologize.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to quote you on that. I like that. We've kind of used up our time. And I have to tell you, Julie, I am on overload. I am very fortunate because I'm going to be able to listen to this again and pick up some of the points that I missed because I was so busy trying to write down some of the other points that you were making. So thank you so much. You've given us so much information that I know is going to be a bedrock for people who are looking for some direction. And I hope people take the time to get in touch with you and pursue go into depth with you on some of the information that you've shared with us. Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope all of you who are listening have found some direction with Julie and that you take the time to go to her links, read out more from her. She's willing to give you some time, so take advantage of her. Use and abuse her, I like to say sometimes, and try and pull as much out as you can. You can reach out to me on my website at justeducationfirst.com if I can help anyone. I also give free phone consultations. I don't really put a limit on it. As long as we're on the phone, we can talk. I'm more than willing to do that for you. Search out some answers. Give yourself some direction. Thank you for being with us. Be safe and stay connected. Thank you, mentors, for being with us today. If you found this podcast of value, please visit justeducationfirst.com to subscribe to our blog and mentorship and education podcast so that you may continue the exploration with us. Our goal is to provide a free treasury of information for our listeners so they can become acquainted with the amazing resources that we have available to us. We want to thank all of our guests for giving their time and sharing their wealth of information with us. Please also visit their websites and explore more of their resources to further your pursuit of the topic. Hope to hear from you at justeducationfirst.com. Have a good week, and thank you.